Hi, I'm Rick Reynolds, and you're listening to Affair Recovery Radio, Radio to the Power of God. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, sponsors, or advertisers of this station. Due to the sensitive nature of the topics discussed on this program, it is not suitable for children, so we strongly advise that children not be within listening range of this program. Also, please be advised that while we are counselors, what we're doing here tonight is not counseling, and if you have a need, we strongly advise that you seek professional help. The Affair Recovery Center is a community of counseling professionals and couples who have experienced the abundant blessing of reconciliation and renewal. We are dedicated to the restoration of marriages crippled by infidelity. Our mission is to offer hope, support, and recovery for couples and individuals who have suffered the pain as a result of infidelity, betrayal, or sexual addiction. We truly believe there's nothing the nearness of God cannot heal. Hi, this is Rick, and welcome to Affair Recovery Radio this evening, Radio to the Power of God, where actually we believe there's nothing the nearness of God cannot heal. And we're going to prove that tonight because we've got somebody here, a friend of mine, who can certainly attest to the fact that there's nothing the nearness of God can't heal. Dan is here tonight, and he's going to be sharing his story. Before we get going, if you have questions for us tonight, then please feel free to call us at area code 512-365-9930. That's 512-365-9930. Or you can also email me at rick@hope-now.com. That's rick@hope-now.com. And this evening, we wanted to let Dana tell his story. Even before we get going there, I just want to give a reminder, if anybody has questions, we do have one of our EMS weekends coming up this coming weekend. So if you have questions about that, also feel free to call in. If you want to ask Dan any questions as he goes through this thing, then you can also call and ask Dan questions. Or if you're just having a particular problem this evening and have a question, just because we're doing a program with Dan tonight doesn't mean that Dan and I can't answer any questions you might potentially have. Dan has a tremendous amount of wisdom. At least he's got a lot of life experience, as you will hear. And so if you're somebody who's recovering, you've got two recovering guys here in the studio right now who would certainly love to talk to you, and it would save us from having to listen to our own voices all night long. So we would love a call. So, again, that's area code 512-365-9930. So, Dan, I'll just let you introduce yourself and begin telling your story here. So, from whence do you hail?
Thanks so much, Rick. This has been a very interesting 12 or 13-month period for me and my wife. Had sort of a life-altering event that occurred last September, started in August, and I'd always had through my life a little black box I'd kept all my little secrets in, and these secrets were wide and vast, but primarily centered around an addiction that I didn't realize, if someone would have asked a year and a half or 2 years ago, if it was an addiction. But when you look back at the insanity of 25 years of living in half of a lie and half of a truth, it was exactly that, an insanity, and that is exactly what an addiction is. So I've always had a flair for the ladies, I guess that's to put it kindly. And there's not much that ever stopped that. Marriage didn't stop that. Children didn't stop that. But again, I'd have something occur, and I'd tuck it away in this little black box, and nobody ever knew about it. And this went on for years and years and years.
So where did you grow up?
I grew up in Illinois, Wheaton, Illinois. And I spent my youth in Wheaton. I had a father that was extremely abusive. Tales of my mother You know, as a young child between the ages of 1 and 5 or 1 and 7, you don't really understand or remember. But he was physically abusive, would beat me with a belt on a regular basis, would never had a full-time job. We'd live somewhere until it came time to absolutely have to pay the rent, that we'd move in the middle of the night. I remember times sleeping in cars in the wintertime up in Illinois with barely enough gas to run the car to keep warm. We lived in a house that he failed to pay the heating bill, and my brother wet the bed that night, and my t-shirt froze to the pee. I couldn't get out of bed. That's how cold it was. So very, very difficult early years to try to form a basis of anything other than survival, I think. You know, I would do something wrong, and he'd send me to the woods to get a stick so he could beat me. And if I didn't provide the adequate size stick, of course, getting the smaller one was always the better option. But that ultimately didn't prove to be the case. He sent me down to get a bigger one, and the beating would be twice as bad. So grew up very poor. You know, I'd like to say we were white trailer trash, but at least they have a trailer. We lived in a car.
So I guess that white car trash is that kind of what that comes to, I guess.
Yeah.
It's pretty sad. Now, how many siblings did you have?
I had a brother, a younger brother, and a younger sister. I was the oldest. And as much as I tried to protect and lead and guide them, it was just absolutely fruitless. There was no basis for a family, really, at all. It was just stark survival. So when I was 7, my mother divorced and remarried a man, and he worked for his father-in-law. So when his wife left him, he pretty much lost his job. And we went right back into that poverty situation again. So my informative years of growing up in junior high and high school were, again, pretty meager, I guess would be an accurate way of saying that. Didn't have a lot of dates as a young kid. Didn't have a lot of, weren't a lot of young girls really interested in the tall, skinny, poor kid in town. But when I joined the Navy, eventually I joined the Navy just to get the heck out of Dodge, I think. And it actually provided some structure, but I learned about sex.
Through the Navy?
Through my first encounter when I was 19 in California, I had my first sexual relationship. And from then on, it was an escape, an adrenaline rush. It was something I'd never experienced before. But once I got my arms around that, it was hang on. It ruled my life for years and years and years and years and years.
Did you grow up in any type of church? Was your family involved with anything?
Ah, good question. I remember when I was younger, a school bus would come around to the house on Sunday mornings, and if my mother and my first father were sober enough to get up and have me half-dressed, I would timidly try to get on a bus to go to a church where I knew absolutely no one. Didn't feel real comfortable about that. When my mother remarried, started attending a Lutheran church, and I was baptized when I was 16 years old, confirmed about the same time into the church. So that was probably the most significant part, or the initial part of my religious, when God was really first into. And I never really understood or appreciated it. It was just a process you went through. You got baptized, and then you got confirmed. And I was an acolyte, but there was no basis, no support, no feeling or understanding for it. When I joined the Navy, it was kind of interesting. I was called to the Catholic Church, and I started attending Catholic Church, which would be a run of about 36 years going to Catholic churches. And one of the little secrets I had in that black box was I wasn't a Catholic. I was going to a Catholic church, but I wasn't a Catholic. So I remedied that when I dumped that little black box of secrets last fall. That was one of the ones that came tumbling out, and I have since rectified that. But no, there was never a presence of God in my life. I was married once, the first time. It was a mistake. Looking for security, I was just out of the Navy on the East Coast. I'd met a family, and it was more for the security of being with than it was more of love. And even though we were married in a Catholic church, there was absolutely no going to church. There was no God in my life. There was no presence. It was church was around, and I attended church, but there was never a connection with God during that period.
One of the things that I've kind of discovered is that our God concept actually is, I mean, our subjective concept of who God is, not objective, but subjective concept of God is formed pretty much by our authority figures growing up, by our parents, how we see him, how we feel about him. Did you see God as somebody who was very trustworthy, or just did you even believe God existed, or kind of what was your view as a younger man of who God was?
I knew there was an entity called God, but it wasn't helping me very much during those times. I was getting beat. We were poor. So I knew there was a God. I had been baptized. I had been confirmed. So I understood conceptually there was a God, but never felt the presence, never had the warmth or that I understand now, definitely that I understand now.
So you got married the first time right after you left the Navy, or?
Yes, shortly after I left the Navy. Yeah.
And how'd you meet her?
Well, when I was in the Navy, I had a friend of mine who had been back to the East Coast, to the Boston area, and he had a girlfriend, and this was her sister, her stepsister, and met her through a mutual friend. And I got along very well with her father. And her father, now looking back, was probably a surrogate father to me in a lot of ways. and I got along with him very well. But I knew that the marriage wasn't the right thing to do. And about 2 weeks before the wedding, I was getting very uncomfortable with the fact we were getting married. He and I went for a ride. And I knew I didn't want to do this. But for the sake of disappointing him, I think I went ahead and stayed on that roller coaster ride of getting married.
So you went ahead and got married then?
Yep. Yep.
Was the sexual acting out still going then, Dan?
No, it was early, very early on in that. But actually, yes, it was. Yes, it was. It never stopped. From the time I first had my first experience at 19, it was a motivated, driven part of my life. And it never really did stop.
Wow.
So when you live in a godless life, and you don't let God be in and part of and recognize his mercy and his strength, it's very easy to live an ungodless life. And that ungodless life can take on so many lying, cheating,
yeah,
stealing.
Absolutely.
Just everything that... So the concept of trying to go to church, I felt that I was always looking for something, but I wasn't sure what that tangible thing was I was looking for. And even in the depths of my insanity with the addiction, I would go to church every Sunday and say, God, please fix this. Please fix this. I just would every Sunday in church. But there's a difference between asking and wanting, or asking and having your eyes wide open to see the need for accepting the change.
Right, exactly.
So, and I've learned that now. I've been so blessed, so very, very blessed in the past 12 or 14 months. It's beyond anything I ever could have imagined. So the insanity of the addiction was my wife and I started growing apart over a period of four or five years. And the farther that she would drift away, caused by this background noise of the insanity, I don't think she ever really knew, kind of probably felt something wrong, different, never really knew. But when she would get upset, my reaction was act out. She would get upset, act out. So it was this death spiral of heading straight, a railroad train out of control, heading straight at a cliff.
So the more she would sit there and try to save the marriage by stepping it up and getting angry at you, the more you would go the other direction.
Yeah, and the less receiving I was to try to understand what it was that was upsetting her, because I probably knew, actually. I knew what it was. And that all changed in that death spiral of so many years. That changed. We went to Europe for the summer, and we went to we ended up in Rome, and we were at the Vatican, and we went through the Basilica and saw St. Peter's tomb. And on the way out, we were actually standing outside, and I said, "I'd like to go back in." And so my wife and my daughters were, okay. So I went back in, and I said a prayer. I knelt down, and I spent 10 or 15 minutes, and I prayed for three things. I asked God to bless my family. I thought in the most holiest of places, I think for a Catholic, bless my family. I asked him to bless my wife's family and my family, and I asked him to fix this thing that was wrong with me.
Did you have a name for this thing that was wrong with you?
Not at that point. I didn't have an associative name. I didn't understand it was an addiction. I didn't understand. I knew it was acting out, and it was the acting out part that I just couldn't seem to stop. Or I didn't. I had no desire to stop it, I guess. The adrenaline rush of the conquest of it was so self-motivating that it was just go get another fix.
So in your form of acting out, Dan, were you actually with other women? Were you just looking at porn? What was happening?
Well, here's an interesting. I suggested before that you've got to have your eyes wide open to see where God's taking you. So God, I went through quite a few jobs, and it was God's way of saying, okay, if you're going to do this, and I convinced myself, and I think this is true, he had some situation occur where I lost my job. Many times it was laid off, technology changes, something happened, but nonetheless, I lost my job. And the first time was for a year, and the self-doubt, depression, all occurred, and acting out continued. But so I survived that, and then acting out continued, and I lost my job again. And slowly, with the depression, if anyone's lost their job for any period of time, it can be devastating. But to go through it two, three, four times I can't even describe the devastation. Not only to you, the person, but to your family and people around you. It was really tough. And I found internet porn. And it was, at first it was just curious. You know, someone told me about it, a friend of mine. And it was just a curiosity. And it was a curiosity that grew into a full-blown up till 4 in the morning. It was awful. It was something that I wish I had never had part of my life, but it was. So no, it was that was another form of acting out. It started, I think, innocent curiosity, if anything's innocent about internet porn, started out as innocent curiosity that just blossomed into a full up till 4 a.m. kind of thing.
Were there also other women in your case?
Sure. There were, yes, many women.
And your wife knew nothing through all of this?
No. Nope.
Did she even have a clue?
Perhaps. There was one, I'd lost a job and they lost track of a cell phone, and I had a cell phone. They stopped the service, so I don't know. I had a cell phone, but it didn't work. And one of my daughter's cell phones died, so I was going to give it to her, and she found some text messages on it that weren't very – and that was about a year and a half or 2 years ago. And that caused a big crevice of doubt. And then there was a second phone with text messages that was found, and that happened last August. So I was going back to the Vatican. I said that prayer. I said, God, please fix this thing that's wrong with me. And 3 hours later in Rome, my daughter found a text message on my GSM phone. So if you don't believe that prayers are answered, they certainly can be. And God said, okay, we're gonna fix this. I'm going to take you. And I ended up being, I think, as broken and devastated as I could ever perceive. I think God recognized. He tried to several times to get my attention. I think losing jobs was his way of trying to get my attention. And I had to be completely broken as an individual. So what's broken?
So how old was your daughter when she found these text messages?
In her late teens, a young woman, an adult.
So what did she do once she discovered the text messages?
Very confused, harbored the information for weeks. I can't imagine the agony that caused her inside.
So she didn't go tell your wife?
Not right away. Eventually she did. And then the text messages were verified, because I had no idea she'd found them. And my wife found them. And at that point, I don't know, I was tired of lying, tired of covering up, tired of living two lives with two different sets of moral standards. And I just gave up. And
so, Dan, what made you go back in the Vatican and say that prayer?
I think morally or spiritually, what I was doing, I knew was wrong. And I knew I couldn't stop it, because I had tried for years, every Sunday in church, God, please fix this thing. And I thought, well, I will try in the most holiest of places to ask him again for his help to try to fix this. So what was the motivation? The motivation was family is extremely important to me. Can you say that as a sex addict? Yeah, I think you can. Family's very important. Wife and kids, very important. And I knew I was on the verge of probably losing all that. And if there was a motivation to go in and try to fix this thing. So I think Satan had a pretty good run with me for a long time. He had his claws deep, 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 deep inside my soul. And I finally surrendered that I absolutely could not fix this thing. And I surrendered that. And what God did for the next 8 weeks was, as a man, broke me down to my very fundamental core as a person.
So when your daughter talked to your wife, and then did your wife confront you or did your daughter confront you?
No, my wife confronted me.
And what did she say to you?
What are the text messages on your phone? And the addict does a great job of lying. I mean, that's the addict's number one defense is deny. So this time I didn't deny. I told her what they were.
So you told her there was somebody else?
Yep.
How did she respond to that?
Oh, frantically. I watched this very kind, peaceful woman become a person I didn't know. I didn't know she was capable of doing some of the things she did. And, of course, the guilt-shame cycle inside of me as I watched her deteriorate mentally, physically, as a person, as a wife. When I watched that deterioration occur, because in the past, when I had this little box of secrets, it was okay because I wasn't hurting anybody.
Right.
It was just this little box of secrets. But real time, when I watched the devastation that was being havoc on my family, the reality of what I had done became so obvious and so apparent. And I think that's one of the motivations for me to be here tonight is I don't want to see anybody go through what I went through. And more importantly, I don't want to see anybody's family go through what I went through. But not what I went through, what they went through.
So did she kick you out once she found out?
Oh, let's just say it wasn't exactly a comfortable place to be. I think the anger and the betrayal became obvious, and I did move out for a while. And what was interesting during that point, and again, I go back to this, God broke me down to my very basic elements. I think of it as he put me in the bottom of a well with very muddy, slippery slides, and he wasn't going to let me out until I was completely broken and ready to accept him 100%.
Right.
So that 6 or 8 week period was very, very bad for me. Again, suicidal, no sense in going on. I destroyed everything around me, that whole. So, but during that period, I knew that this thing inside me, I needed some help. Meanwhile, I could see my wife and I going 90 miles an hour toward a divorce. So I asked one of my neighbors, I said, I got a friend that's in some trouble.
The old friend in trouble. So tonight, if you want to call in here to Affair Recovery Radio, you can call about your friend. That's fine. Yeah, heard that one a bunch.
So she pointed me to a lawyer. So I sat down with the lawyer, and he said, okay, well, here's what you got to do to protect yourself, and we're going to do this, and da, da, da. And I said, well, wait a minute, I'm not here to get a divorce. I'm just trying to understand what this. And the minute I said that, he was done with me. Oh, you don't want a divorce? Well, get out. Basically, go away. I'm in the divorce business, and if you want a divorce, I don't want to talk to you anymore. And he gave me the name of this company called Crossroads. So about that time, and I wasn't living at home, but having occasional conversations with my wife, she, meantime, got on the internet and did a search for marriage counseling. And she thought we had a marriage counseling problem, obviously. And she ended up talking to a counselor in Colorado. Not sure how she got this counselor, but a counselor in Colorado. And his advice to her, she said, very kind, very generous man. His advice to her was find someone local. So she found this place called Crossroads. So she called me up one day and she said, oh, I found this place called Crossroads. And I said, really? She said, yeah. And I said, well, I have an appointment there in 3 days. She said, and so here's the grace of God in this. She told me that if I would have suggested a marriage counseling place, she absolutely would not have gone. Would not have gone. So when I look back at some of the minor miracles God has created in the past 14 or 15 months, the first one was that he brought my wife and I together through totally separate paths to Crossroads. And I think if it wasn't for that one common denominator of Crossroads, we probably, I sure wouldn't be on the show tonight. And I'm quite sure we'd be in a totally, totally different place. So God broke me, had me down to my barest elements. Somehow, I obviously did not commit suicide, although I came about as close as anybody could ever want.
So you thought about committing suicide?
Oh, no. I got marks on my wrists where it was that close.
Yeah, so I mean that seemed like the best option at that moment.
It was the only option at that moment. And I had a long, heated conversation with God. Why did you let me do this? How could you have let me do this? How could you have let me have this insanity for all this time and not do anything about it? Where were you when I needed you? How come? Why? Up all night just screaming and yelling at him, crying, snot running down my nose, just huge one-on-ones with him, trying to figure out how he could have let me get so far off track and not have been more in my life and the hard part was watching the people you love suffer. That was the hardest thing. Anything else that happened to me would have been fine. It was watching other people that had no right in suffering just devastated.
So people that were innocent were just kind of being destroyed because of the way you'd lived.
Yep. That was the hardest part. That was absolutely the hardest part.
So, I mean, knowing that you came to Crossroads, what was the... had you told your wife everything at that point?
No. So when I went to Crossroads, the description that I provided with the first session I had was... I felt like there was a snake wrapped around my spine with his head in my mind, and it just squeezed me. And as I think back now and reflect back, that description to me is so accurate when Satan wants to get a hold of you. And I just let Satan run. I just let him run. So... No, I went through a full disclosure with my wife. Did it over two sessions on the phone. I was traveling. I don't know if, well, obviously God wanted it that way, but it happened over two, full disclosure, and ended up at, I took a polygraph test, and I passed the polygraph test. But the extent of my insanity was rather severe. And it wasn't that I had one or two or a dozen. It was absolutely insane. So to go full disclosure and remember everything you've done was hard. But nonetheless, I passed a lie detector test. And at that same time, I sought out one of the deacons of church and told him what I had done, and told him I needed to get right with God. And he suggested a path for me, which I started on, and it took 8 or 9 months to go down that path. And I also started an addiction program in town, and I started a 12-step program. And last December, I gave my first step, which pretty much encompasses everything we've talked about now. And the amazing thing of surrendering yourself to God, which I do every morning, every morning, I know I'm not smart enough, good enough, or capable without Him right next to me, leading, guiding, directing. And I surrender, ask Him for help. Can't get through this day without You. My life has changed, black and white. It's just so much different. I've always been a fairly successful drinker. I can polish off a six-pack a night with the best of them. And I've been that way my whole life. And last year for Lent, I gave up drinking, and I haven't had a drink since. And I haven't had to white-knuckle it. I haven't had to go to an AA meeting. I just have had no urge, no desire, no want. So it supports, I think, when you turn your life over to God. When you're serious about it, you turn your life over to God, you are aware now of Satan in your life and the tugs and pulls and things. And it's funny because whenever my wife and I try to do something good at church, Satan will step in and screw it up. He has done it. And it's to the point where my wife and I now know what's coming. If something good is coming in church or something is coming up, we'll just go, uh-oh, let's just wait and see what's going to happen, because he will step right up and try to screw with us somehow.
Now, I know in the initial stages, you and your wife also did one of the EMS weekends.
Yes.
That correct?
We did. So the EMS weekend was vitally important for us. So let me get back to EMS. So you go back. My wife goes, I need a marriage counselor. Where do I go? I Google marriage counseling and try to find a place. I didn't know where to go. I went to a lawyer. But I don't think the general public, when someone needs help, I don't know if they know where there's an SA meeting in town. I don't know if they know that Crosswords exists. I don't know. I think there's a lot of people out there that just continue on day by day with the problems, issues, with the evil, don't have a clue on where to turn. They don't know where to go to get help. And part of that is you've got to be ready. God's got to help.
Right.
God's got to help you. You've got to be ready, eyes wide open. So we ended up going back to the EMS weekend. And that was the most remarkable weekend, I think. I saw my wife in a totally different way after that weekend. Spirituality of God being present, the ability for her and I through the Crossroads counseling session to lead, guide, and direct us, to put us in a place where we could it set a baseline for us to communicate. It put us back. It said, okay, we're going to reset things here, and kind of put us in a place where we could then have a level playing field to start to rebuild our relationship one day at a time. And without that, I think she would have doubted me, and I can't blame her at all. she would have doubted me. I don't think I would have had the intimacy that helped me bring. I don't think we would have had God as much in our life as we do now. So the EMS weekend was vitally important for us from a resetting standpoint. Put us down to a level playing field. We had an intimacy. We were able to talk to each other. We had said things to each other in the EMS weekend that we probably have not said or thought in tens of years. And it was a very moving, in retrospect, a very rewarding weekend. And I would urge anybody that has any type of a marital conflict to attend a weekend like that. It was just that important for us to form a basis to start new again. So we attended the EMS weekend. That was another crucial point in the rebuilding process. And my wife says I can see that you walk with God every day, and it's absolutely not something that she would have said a year and a half ago. Never would she have said that. And so the effect that this had long term, I did something I think kind of stupid last January. I was so upset with Satan for doing what he did. I said, I'm godly now. I've got God. There's nothing you could possibly do to me anymore. So bring it on. And he did. He picked on my daughter. He put my daughter through hell for a 3 or 4 month period. So I learned another valuable lesson. Don't sell him short. He will and does on a regular basis. Do his best to make your life as miserable as possible.
So one of the things you've kind of learned then, Dan, is the need to continue to pray for your family and try to protect your family through the recovery process.
Yes, absolutely. And so my prayers ritual lasts about 30 minutes. And the deacon I saw at church, as with all the wisdom of, said it's okay to pray, but you also have to listen.
Right.
It's not a send only. It's a send and receive process. So I have a way that I do that I make sure I listen. It was kind of interesting. I usually did it in walks in the morning. I'd go for walks, and I'd go, I'm done. Okay. Halfway through the walk, I'm going to listen now. And I was getting back near my house, and my eyes were closed. And it's kind of interesting when you walk with your eyes closed. You stay and not wander out in the middle of the road. But I heard someone call my name twice, and I thought there was someone behind me. There was nobody around. It's one of those, I think, one of those God moments where he just wanted me to know that if you listened hard enough, he'll be there. So that was a rewarding period for me. And I think he lets you know so you can then find a way to search for him even harder.
Right.
So, yeah, but my the recovery process is my wife and I are sharing a relationship that we haven't had in so long. Such a beautiful, wonderful relationship. We read scripture every day. There's kind of an interesting book, and it's called The New Testament for Dads.
And I haven't heard of that one.
Oh, it's really good. It's a fantastic. So I read that to my wife every day, and I think you get through the new chapter in a year. But I travel sometimes, so I get behind a day, so sometimes we do two. But it's an absolutely beautiful way to start your morning out. So we start out, we read that, read the paper. She goes to work. I do my prayer session. And every night before I fall asleep, just thank God for the day I've had. I think the other interesting thing in trying to become more godlike is trying to remain positive, not let the negative things outweigh the positive things that happen in your life. So I try to focus at night on the positive things that have happened and how wonderful the day's been and the things I have to be grateful for, because the other side is ugly. So
now, is this prayer thing something you did prior to when you began your recovery? Were you praying and reading the Bible all the time, or is this something?
No. So I was so far away from God when I was in. I was so far away from Him. I went to church, so I thought I was a Christian. I could put that label, but I was so far away from God.
Yeah. It's interesting how God uses sometimes the worst things, and He takes those things and draws us to Him. I mean, that to me is an astounding thing. That's what lets me know He's a big God. Not that He keeps bad things from happening, but it's His ability to take bad things and make it the best thing that ever happened.
So I'm motivated, for some reason, to talk to people about this to the degree I can. It's not a widely accepted addiction.
You're kidding, Dan.
I can't blame the brown bottle or the bottle of pills. It's not something tangible out there. It is your most basic good and evil battle with nothing to blame except your ability to accept God or not. And it's the toughest battle to fight. And it's the hardest one for anybody to try to understand. I don't think good people want to do bad things. I don't think godly people want to do. And that's why I think you've got to be near God every hour. So here's the benefit of being in an addiction is I have to walk with God every minute of every day. Because if I don't, the evil one tries to get me to go this way.
Preach it, brother.
And if I am not right there, again, another blessing God's given me is I have to walk with Him every minute of every day, or I'm going to be in a bad place in a hurry.
So you're telling me you're too weak to be able to do this on your own strength?
I am so weak. I'm a mortal human with every weakness that comes with that label. So when you surrender yourself to God and you turn over your life to Him, and when you run into problems, you say, God, don't know why you're doing this. I'm not sure where it's taken me. I know it's got a good ending somewhere, so I'm all yours. Lead me, guide me, direct me.
And you're still married, Dan, to your sweet wife.
I have a beautiful wife, one of the other blessings.
How are your kids taking all of this?
I think they know but don't know. It's not something I sat them down and said, guess what, kiddos, here's your dad. I think that will come in time. I think that they understand something happened. And so there's two options. I force the issue or I let God lead me in that. And I think God will make it known in His time to them when it's right for them to know, when it's appropriate. I had an option some time ago to lay that out on the table, and I just didn't feel comfortable that it was the right time. I think there will be a right time. But so again, when I look back over the last 12 or 14 months, I have been graced in so, so many different ways. And being broken, totally and completely broken, is not a very nice place to be. It's tough. Tougher than woodpecker lips to be that broken. But I think some people have to be that broken to get better. If you limp along and say, I can fix this, I can fight this, I'll continue to hide this, nobody's going to know, you're not going to make it. You have got to surrender this.
Well, and I know that for people who've been listening tonight, being able to hear some of the things you've learned along the way, just the prayer, the reading, the rituals, I mean, the meetings, I just appreciate your openness and being willing to share this. And I wish y'all could see him crying over here. He's got wonderful tears.
I'm so compelled to try to say there's somebody out there hurting tonight. There's someone out there that absolutely is where I was, and they need to be in a safe place to help them get back together with God and their families. And I only pray that they'll give the station a call. I was motivated to be here tonight for some reason that I may or may not understand, but I'm here, I think, by the grace of God. And I know there's somebody out there somewhere that needs to make that phone call. I'm absolutely convinced. So I'm here for a reason. I'm not confused by that. I'm absolutely here for a reason tonight.
I agree. And as we're wrapping up tonight, guys, just know that Dan and I really care. I mean, we are the blessed ones who, through surrender, have really been touched. And it's great to be free again, because that snake wrapped around your spine with its head up in your brain is not a pleasant experience. So we would love to be able to share with you through all of that. And as we end tonight, also I just want to remind everybody, we have one of the new online courses. We'll beginning this next week. And so certainly if you know of anyone, or if you yourself can avail yourself of that particular resource, we'd love to be able to minister to you and be able to walk with you along this journey. And we also have an EMS weekend coming up, and this next weekend. So if you have any questions, please give us a call at area code 512-346-9299. That's 512-346-9299. Or you can also go to the website at affairrecovery.com. That's affairrecovery.com. And I'll tell you guys, for those of you who faithfully listen, and actually I know there's more and more of you because we keep hearing about you, thank you for joining us tonight. And continue to spread the good news that infidelity can be cured, and that God is more than capable of doing this. So you guys have a great week. Blessings to you.
Thank you for joining us tonight and being a part of the newest addition to our services, Affair Recovery Radio, radio through the power of God. We'd like to invite you to go to our website, affairrecovery.com, and register for our free newsletter, as well as taking advantage of our free podcast. You will find that these resources are invaluable if you're trying to recover from some form of betrayal. We are here to help. We can also be contacted at 888-5-ARC-EMS. That's 888-5-ARC-EMS. And remember, there's nothing the nearness of God cannot heal.
Good night. God bless.
Then the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah, "I am the Lord, the God of all mankind. Is anything too hard for me?"